Okay, welcome back to the show. A little late, actually, and this is my fault, not anybody else's. It's a request for my mom, Jean McFadden from Falkara. A very happy 80th birthday today. Best wishes from Maria and Joe. And happy 80th birthday to Nana Jean McFadden from Falkara. Enjoy your day. Love always from Orla, Amy, Emma and Shay O'Donnell. And a big happy birthday to you, Jean, from all of us here at Highland Radio and all of our listeners too. I hope you have a wonderful day. And my apologies, just a little bit late in getting to that. Right. Liam Cannon is a psychotherapist and founder of New Dawn Counselling, and he joins us on the programme now. Good morning to you, Liam.
Good morning, Greg.
I know you have concerns because you've sort of hinted at them in our previous conversations, if you haven't actually said it directly, and that's over the regulation of counselling services in Ireland. So I think it's really important that when someone goes to seek help or support, that they're actually getting help and support that's of benefit to them. What is the situation in terms of regulation in this area at the moment?
Okay, well, over the last, I suppose, really since the foundations of the profession of counselling and psychotherapy in Ireland, you have a number of accrediting bodies that have been set up, you know, over the years. And those bodies actually have been responsible for regulating the profession to date. So those bodies have done a really good job, you know, really, to be honest with you, because the standards that they have set, and I'll just give you an example. And currently in Ireland, in order to work as a counsellor or psychotherapist, the requirement is a minimum of a Level 8 honours degree.
Which is hard one.
Which is, yeah. But also, you know, that's the academic requirement. Mm. But on top of that, what is required is that during training, a trainee therapist would have a minimum of 50 hours of personal therapy. And that's really a huge part of the training. Because in order to, you know, work with other people and in order to recognise if you're being triggered by somebody else's material, you need to kind of look at your own life and your own experience. And so that's a huge part of it. On top of that, you're also required to have a placement. And during placement, you have to work face-to-face with a minimum of 120 clients. And then on top of that, for every 5 client hours that you work, you have an hour of clinical supervision with an experienced supervisor.
Now, that sounds like it is good, because that means it's very robust, right?
Absolutely.
But you're speaking from a position of someone who's gone through all of that.
Absolutely.
Is it somewhat too robust? You know, it sounds like a lot. Or do you believe that that is what's necessary to be able to? Because I'm thinking someone who might be interested in getting into this field might be saying, well, that's easy for Liam to say. But, you know, I think I could do a very good job in the space if.
No, well, you see, you have to remember you're dealing with material that quite often is, I mean, as a psychotherapist, you're dealing a lot of the time with unconscious material. And so your job is to really understand the unconscious. Your job is to really help the client from information that they present to you, you know, the links between what has happened in their past or impacted them from their past that's still impacting them today.
Yeah.
And that's the difference. So you
it's
need...
complexity.
You need... it's complex. But you need that level of understanding of yourself and also of your clients that you're working with.
How did we find ourselves with 20 professional bodies responsible for these fields? It sounds like an awful lot. How did we find ourselves in that situation?
Well, yeah, we do have quite a number of accrediting bodies, and they all have different standards. They all, however, are very similar.
Yeah,
In terms of what
the
requirements. In terms of what the academic requirements are, and in terms of, you know, the process that you must engage in. But I suppose we have different people who have different ideas about it, and they have founded, you know, the accrediting bodies, but they have adopted this very similar standards to what's in the UK. So that's where we are.
So that would be classed as self-regulation.
Yes.
Now, some people might go, well, self-regulation, you know, who's watching who? And then there's this plan to move it to statutory regulation, which some people might say, right, okay, well, that sets out a certain standard and, you know, there's oversight and it's not self-regulation. And on the face of it, that seems like where we should be going in this day and age. But obviously you have concerns in relation to that. Why so?
Well, yeah, of course, you know, the other... I suppose that you have your accrediting bodies, and then, you know, over the last number of years, because of the unregulated profession and because of the type of work that's done, it was important to have it regulated. And this is ongoing for 20 years, to be honest with you. Okay. It's 20 years in the making. However, the people appointed by the government to put statutory regulation in place is CARU. And CARU are responsible for health and social care professions and regulating them. So they do regulate other professions. However, my concern here is that we do need better standards. But the concern I have currently is what they're presenting as regulation. So I suppose it's quite complex in a way for people.
Well, maybe. can I ask a question, yeah, and see if this helps?
Yeah.
I'm getting the impression, and I could be wrong, that we are making changes to stop people who are very poorly qualified from operating in this space or self-identifying or what have you.
Yeah.
But in doing so, we potentially could be lowering the bar overall.
Well, yeah, that's exactly it, Greg, and that's exactly what's actually happening. On one part of it, we're raising the bar academically, because now we're requiring a level 8 for a counsellor and level 9 for a psychotherapist. Mm-hmm. And so that's okay. I don't have a problem with raising the academic bar, but I do have a problem in the other part of it, which they're saying that there's no requirement for personal therapy.
Yeah.
Which is a big part of anybody who's a psychotherapist.
How broadly is that felt in the... would you be classed as an outlier in this space in... concerns that personal therapy might not form part of the new regulation?
No.
Yeah, it's across the...
It's across
the
board.
Why might they get rid of that requirement?
Well, because I don't think they understand the profession.
Okay, that's a problem. Okay.
Simple, they don't understand the profession. The other part of it is that, you know, as I was explaining to you, when you're a trainee, you're expected to be in supervision as a student, but post-qualifying, you're in supervision for the duration of your career.
Mm.
And you have to, you know, under the current regulation, you have to have an hour of supervision per month minimum.
Okay.
So I am a supervisor. I am, you know, a qualified supervisor. I have to have supervision of my supervision work.
Yeah.
And I also have to have supervision of my practice work. And that's where I sit with somebody, like sitting with you here,
yes,
now, present the cases that I'm maybe struggling with, and the supervisor is, you know, works with me to look at, you know, how to manage those. They're saying, CARU are saying, there is no, we don't need to be doing this.
Yeah.
So they're scrapping the personal therapy and the supervision.
Why
piece.
Might they do that? I presume in coming up with regulation, they're going to be chatting to, you know, either the 20 bodies that were previously responsible for this or those like yourself.
Yeah.
Who are not only supervised, but can supervise.
Yeah.
Was there consultation with the people that have been doing this for the longest?
There was consultation with the accrediting bodies, and they came out with a draft a number of years ago. The draft had been circulated to the memberships of all the accrediting bodies, and the draft, there was a lot of amendments put forward to CARU that needed to happen in relation to the draft. And now, most recently, they have come back with a new draft of it. Well, you know, basically they're saying there's no more consultation, but there has been zero public consultation on this at all.
Yeah. Now, there's been a warning issued that CARU, that if Ireland keeps going the way it is, it'll have the lowest level of standards in counselling in the EU.
Absolutely, yeah.
Is that purely because of the removal of self-counselling, or however you phrase that?
Well, you know, the European Association for Counselling and psychotherapy are actually, their standards are quite high, which I don't have a problem with high standards. It's essential with the work that's done. However, they're looking at what CARU are proposing and how the structure of it. So the you know, the removal of the personal therapy, the removal of the clinical supervision, you know, all those elements that are very core.
Well, they're checks and balances, aren't they?
Well, they're checks and balances, but they're much more than checks and balances. They're actually ensuring that the person, the psychotherapist, isn't going to burn out.
Yeah, their welfare as much as anyone's.
They have written, the European Association has written to CARU there most recently, stating very clearly that if they proceed with the current suggestions or template that they have there, that Ireland is going to have the lowest standards within the profession in Europe.
Okay.
Which is very worrying.
Now, obviously, this conversation is having been had in your circles extensively, and something you have been contributing to, working on, you know, reacting to, etc. I think the purpose of this conversation really is you want to make, firstly, the public aware of this situation. And if they're minded to agree with you and share your concerns, to make representations to their local public representative in this regard.
Exactly, Greg. Yeah, that's the really important piece, is that you lobby your local representatives to put forward something, you know, to have this re-looked at again, because this needs to be looked at. And again, it's not about lowering the standards, it's about at least maintaining what's already there, and the core elements. I mean, psychotherapy is a vocation rather than a profession.
Is CARU, it's actually not fair for me to ask you their motivation, but are they trying to make a career in psychotherapy or counselling more accessible? Is that
no.
Are they under pressure to have a bigger throughput? Like, why might they remove something that's been proven to be effective?
I think I think the removal or the change, I suppose, is essential. It's necessary. We do need change.
Yeah, understood.
But what I think CARU are the issue I have with CARU is that they clearly do not understand the profession.
Okay.
And they're going along with, if I put it to you in this way, they're going along with the likes of psychology. So, because psychology, you know, somebody studies psychology for 4 years and they come out with a certificate, but they're actually not a psychologist. They have to continue. Mm-hmm. So it's academic they're looking at.
Yeah,
rather than
so you'll think that maybe this is a lack of understanding or oversight rather than a calculated decision almost.
I think there needs to be further consultation on it, absolutely, and there needs to be, I think, more representation from the accrediting bodies. The model that's there could have been enhanced, and make the regulation process, on the template that's already existing, rather than, doing a clean sweep and coming up with something completely different, that's one part of it. And I think, going back to what you said there, it's really important that people lobby their local representatives out there to even raise this, because this is a big issue, particularly when Europe has actually, the European Association has actually made a stand on it themselves to say that Ireland's going to have the lowest standards within the profession. But on another note, in relation to all this, I mean, people need to be aware that because it's an unregulated profession, there are many therapists out there with the very minimum of training, weekend courses, the likes, and they're setting themselves up as counsellors and psychotherapists with fantastic websites. They're very good at
doing that. Yeah.
So it's really important, I would say, to a member of the public, anybody out there who's looking to engage with a therapist, don't be afraid to ask them what their training is. Who are they accredited by? And that's a really important question. They need to
Well, what's the correct answer? Because, there's 20 accrediting bodies at the moment. Like, how would someone know if they said, Johnny No Mates versus, whomever. Like, how do we know the difference between what is a good accreditation or not, or none?
Yeah, well, I mean, any of the main bodies that are out there. So we're talking about the Irish Association of Counselling and Psychotherapy, we're talking about the Irish Council of Psychotherapy, and we're talking about Irish Association of Humanistic Integrative Psychotherapists.
Right, okay.
So those are the main leading bodies, but there are other, yes, bodies out there who, you know, you need to check what's required.
Mm.
So at the minute, a Level 8 Honours degree is required. And if somebody hasn't got that, then it's telling you that, you know, they haven't actually gone through that process themselves, you know.
Right, okay. Is there any way people can sort of brief themselves on this, you know, so that, I mean, obviously,
yeah,
you know, people are very good and they can pick up the information as we speak, but time, you know, you can sort of, if they want to find out more information on this, is there a resource that they can have a look at before making contact with their local rep if they're moved to do
so? Well, yes, of course. I think, you know, there's lots of information online on it, but the accrediting bodies will have information on their websites as well in relation to it. So, you know, that maybe will, I suppose, decipher, you know, the large volumes of paper that all these things produce and bring the key points that need to be addressed to the surface, you know, in a short synopsis.
Okay, I hope we covered it adequately.
Yeah.
And I think people will get where you're coming from. I do appreciate your time, Liam Cannon, psychotherapist and founder of New Dawn Counselling. Thanks so much for calling in for that conversation. Carol said, as Liam said there on Facebook, there are many therapists who are fully accredited through different organisations which don't fall under the three mentioned here. Ask the question of your therapist. They'll be more than happy to give you the information. Right, now, Sandra Adams is a concerned parent about the new curriculum and joins me on the show now. Hi, Sandra, how are you getting on?
I'm great. It's a beautiful day in Dublin. I hope it's beautiful where you are.
It's actually stunning, Sandra. Now, I know you were part of the consultation process and you had time with Patrick Sullivan, who we spoke to earlier. So do you have concerns that remain?
I do, yeah. I was engaged in an in-person focus group. I met with Mr. Sullivan online with other parents who were also concerned. And I would have to say, I would actually agree with a lot of what Rebecca said there before the 10 o'clock news. Parents haven't been given all the information, and you can't consent to something unless you know what you're consenting to. It's a bit like being offered a contract after you've signed it and there's an additional 5 pages that you never saw. And just this morning, I went on to the NCCA, or so it's curriculum.ie, which has the new curriculum. And if you look at the wellbeing toolkit, there is a section on sexual orientation. Mm-hmm. And when you go into it, it does actually talk about gender identity. Now, the unfortunate thing is that the whole document isn't available. It says that sexual orientation is distinct from gender identity, and it then directs teachers to page 56, but page 56 isn't available. Now, I have no problem with teachers talking about gender identity if it comes up in the classroom, but what I want to know is, how will it be discussed? Will it be presented to children as a fact? So will teachers say everyone has a gender identity, or will teachers say some people believe they have a gender identity?
This is the problem we have here, just in relation to that, because you know, we've been assured that gender doesn't form any part of it. And you might have heard, I don't know if you heard my conversation with Patrick Sullivan, presumably out of habit said LGBT, and then clarified, no, there's no T, it's not T, there's no gender, it is literally about sexual orientation. So I'm in a little bit of a dilemma. Well, so I've got someone who's responsible for it telling me to my face and on the record that gender does not form part of the curriculum. And then I have you, Sandra, referencing a non-existent page saying it is. And I just want to make sure, as you can imagine, that I get the correct information out.
Yeah, of course.
There.
Well, what I would say is I would direct parents to curriculumonline.ie, primary/curriculum area toolkit. And they will see the wellbeing toolkit, support materials, and 4 bullet points. And one of them is sexual orientation. Click into it and you will find gender identity is listed. Mm. it's then directing you to a page that is not available. Now, what I would say with regard to what Mr. Sullivan said, I asked Mr. Sullivan for a definition of a phrase that is in the framework document. Now, parents need to understand this. The curriculum isn't one document. It was 26 years ago. Now it's multiple documents. There is a framework which I engaged with in the consultation. It mentions gender and sexual identity. I asked for a definition of that. Mm-hmm. I FOI'd it. It was never provided. Mm-hmm. Now, the toolkit seem to be saying something different to what the specification is saying. That is deeply worrying. If you think about it in another way, there is a new anti-bullying policy being introduced to schools called Be Kinaltis, Be Kind. Everyone is concerned about bullying. No child should be bullied. In the policy, it talks about transphobic bullying. No child who has a gender identity should be bullied. But the problem with it is, if you talk about transphobic bullying to primary school children, you have to talk about gender identity.
But the,
you can't avoid it.
So the scenario as it's set out, right, so they're talking about possible questions to explore in this toolkit. And one of them is let me see, where does it say? Can you think of stories, movies, or real-life examples where people love someone of the same gender, a different gender, or more than one gender? Is that what you...
Now, what does that mean?
Well, the gender... So,
well, what does gender mean and what does sex mean?
Well,
because they are very important.
Yeah, but the point is, as you see, if we're only talking about male and female gender, which is what I've told we are, it's quite clear. So if I were to love someone of the same gender, for me it'd be a man. A different gender, it'd be a woman. Or if I was bisexual, it would be man and woman. It says key vocabulary for teaching this learning outcome: gay, lesbian, bisexual, relationship, attraction, love, sexual orientation, heterosexual. There's no reference to non-binary. There's no reference to identifying as a different gender. It's the semantics of the word gender versus sex. But if you are of the view that there are only two genders, you shouldn't have any issue with the language.
No, it's not just semantics. It's really important to understand what the words mean. So does gender mean biological sex?
Okay.
Or does gender include gender identity?
Well, it says clearly.
And that is something we have to be clarified. Because let me give you this example. What if a child asks a question about gender identity in the classroom? How are teachers being trained?
But you're saying gender identity. You see, but Sandra, it's almost as if the gender war has been won in this document, because gender, there's no need for clarification or sex, because as from what I can see in this document, there's two genders, male and women, or women and men, because it says, it says here, how can you explain sexual orientation in a child-friendly way?
Yeah.
Some people are attracted to someone of the same gender, that's called gay or lesbian.
Yeah,
that's clearly defining gender as men and women. Yeah,
I think you're correct. If I think of a red car and you think of a red car, you might think of a Porsche and I might think of a Mini, and they're both red. But some people, when they hear the word gender, they hear biological sex.
But some people, when they hear the word gender, yeah, of course. But gender, some would feel that the word gender was hijacked. Right?
I agree with them.
Yeah, okay.
I think it has been hijacked.
Okay, but this language, as far as I can see, seems to be reclaiming it as gender meaning man and woman. There's no ambiguity. I see nothing in this document that suggests gender is fluid, gender can be changed. It looks to me like they have taken control of it and said actually it's man or woman. If you're attracted to someone of the same...
You are looking at one document.
I'm looking at the bit you referenced.
The document is backed up.
Sandra, I'm looking at the bit you referenced.
By the well-being... The well-being toolkit is a suite of resources that will be used to deliver the curriculum.
That's what I'm referencing. It's the primary well-being strand, emotional and relational education. That's the bit I'm quoting.
Yeah.
This is the toolkit for teachers. That's what
yes,
I'm looking
and
at.
And I'm quoting the same document, and I'm quoting the same document to you, and I'm saying where it says relevant definitions for well-being, sexual orientation, it says sexual orientation is distinct from gender identity. Go to page 56. I can't see what's on page 56, so I do not know how teachers are being directed to address a question, a legitimate question that a child might have.
If you
think of it from this perspective, and this is why parents are not paranoid. They're right to be concerned.
Okay, so let's role play, Sandra. So what would you see? So I'm 13, right? And I say, they're talking about genders, and they're being quite specific in the genders. Okay. And I say, well, my auntie was born a man. What does that mean, teacher?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is the appropriate
Your
response
auntie was
to that?
Born. I think what we would need to be clear about is that are we talking about gender identity? And the teacher then is put in an impossible position because they either have to say to that child, yes, your auntie is a man, which is telling children in the class that women can turn into men, or the teacher has to say, some people believe that that is the case. And then you have an issue where the children in the class are being confused because the problem is if you look at something like the Beacon Office anti-bullying policy, if a child says, I don't believe that a man can turn into a woman or a woman can turn into a man, but one of their peers does, or one of their peers has a relative who has, or they think they are born in the wrong body, is that child then going to be accused of bullying?
Well, you see,
these things are all connected, and it's a refusal to answer a question directly. And it's this question. Are we permitted to say, I do not believe everyone has a gender identity. You can believe it if you wish.
But you see, your fight has been won in terms of gender.
If you could just let me ask the question
because maybe you're a mind reader. I haven't put it to you yet. Gender ideology is out of the SPHE for primary schools. There's no ambiguity there. Gender ideology is in the SPHE. If you could point me to that so I could understand your point then.
Yeah, I have pointed you to it.
But you're
in the well-being toolkit.
I'm in the well-being toolkit. The well-being toolkit to me, from what I can see, and I'm also looking at the key vocabulary for teaching learning outcomes, that there are two genders, male and female. That's all I see in this document. You're concerned about how a teacher then might be outside of this SPHE document, interpret a question from a student.
I'll explain to you why I have legitimate concerns about that. Because the Irish National Teachers Organization produced a training video for teachers
to answer that
exact question.
Yep.
And the video says, if a boy says, Miss, can a boy become a girl? Can a girl become a boy? Mm-hmm. The answer was yes. Now, that to my knowledge, the INTO has not rescinded that training and has not retracted that belief. So it is an entirely legitimate concern. That if it is, because it is, the concept is out there in the world, it will come up in classrooms. What we as parents are entitled to know is how will the question be answered? Because my fear is that the department has made a decision that it does believe people can change sex. And if you allow anyone to query that, you then face a very, very difficult situation in the classroom. And it's an impossible position that teachers and principals have
to
put in.
Yes, but if teachers are asked questions all of the time. Say it's a mixed race couple. Say a child asks about a mixed race couple. Teacher, my mom's going out with a white guy or whatever it might be. Okay. Mm. Each individual teacher is well able to discuss that, I presume, to answer that question.
I'm not sure what that's got to do
because,
with
because
sex,
you're
though,
talking because it's a potential for awkward social questions that might come up in the classroom. That's all I'm saying. I'm sure these questions happen all of the time, whereby it's a complicated social question that you have to deal with, and there's not a toolkit, right? that I can see at this point that promotes gender fluidity or gender changing. Well, I can only go by what's black and white here in front of me, not what questions may come up.
Okay, well, we'll talk about what's black and white and what's in front of you. In the Beacon Office anti-bullying policy, there's lots of resources for parents and for teachers to go to. And included in that is Tenny and Belong To. But if there's no reference to an organisation called GenSpect, which would have a different view of how we compassionately look after people who have issues with their gender in an evidence-based way. Now, that to me very clearly states a decision has been made about what the department believes, because there can be no, there's no allowance made that people might have a different view. But there is a document, or not, there's a training booklet called Busybody that was produced by the HSE, and it's used in teaching in SPHE in primary schools. And that states clearly everybody has a gender identity.
Now, let me just put it to you, Sandra. Let me put it to you at this point, okay? If we were 2023, I don't know when you were in this conversation with Patrick Sullivan, but where we are now, okay, that the EHRC in the United Kingdom, our nearest neighbours, including Northern Ireland, I could spit into Northern Ireland from here, have stated very, very clearly what sex is. It's biological, born a man, born a woman. They've also, and are about to issue guidance shortly, that means someone born a male, under any circumstances, can't go into female spaces. Since 2023, one sport after another now has, bar the park run, has eliminated people who've changed gender, in inverted commas, from participating in a different sport. We've got the opposition party here, Sinn Féin, Padraig McLaughlin, who's the party whip, saying quite clearly what a woman is, right? So society, that question was posed. It was a bit awkward as to how we would deal with it, right? But gender ideology now is in retreat, whether that's right or wrong. Look at the United States of America. Puberty blockers for kids have been banned. Schools being able to withhold different pronouns from the parents. It's done away with. That's what I was saying. When it's retreating.
If only we,
Do you not? Do you accept what I'm saying?
If only we. No, I don't know. Actually, I'm afraid we in Ireland are not in that fortunate position. It is not being retreated from here. It's being doubled down on. Mm. And if you think about the sporting bodies, let's talk about the Ladies Gaelic Football Association, which permits males to play in the female category. It is not in retreat in Ireland. This curriculum is in black and white telling you it is not in retreat. The Beacon Office anti-bullying policy tells you it is not in retreat. You go into Crumlin Children's Hospital and it is festooned with Progress Pride flags. It is not in retreat. And parents are not paranoid. I would say to parents, in the most respectful way, you make it very clear to your principal and to your teachers that you do not want these concepts taught to your children and you want an option to remove them. Mm. It is impossible to remove them.
Well, it seems like, really, to be honest with you, we both need to see page 56, you know?
We need to. Well, what I would say, Rebecca made a really important point. Yeah, Rebecca made a really important point. She said that when Minister McEntee was discussing the Convention on Education, which is coming up, that Helen McEntee didn't talk about parents. And you said no. On the 24th of July, there was a press release issued, and it does state parents. Mm-hmm. And I would say to you, go and look at all of the social media posts from the day after, the 25th of July, including a two-camera recorded video that Minister McEntee made on X, on Instagram, on LinkedIn. There is no mention of parents
I know, Sandra. I think some of that's gotcha stuff, that because she omitted it, the official document, the plan involves parents. And she said it in the press.
How can we have confidence in a minister who has children, who is a parent, and who speaks to camera about a convention on education and doesn't notice that parents aren't included in the list of
in what she says. Okay,
I am not a stakeholder.
I understand. I understand. I get you. I think they need to clarify it because, to be honest with you, a lot of this stuff is very easy for them to clarify. You know, show us page 56. Personally, I don't think anymore that there is a will by the powers that be. Maybe I'm being naive, but I await to be proven my change otherwise. I don't think there is a move now to actively push gender ideology, personally speaking, but we will keep a very close eye on it because I want to make sure that those... Why are you laughing at me, Sandra? Out of interest.
No, I'm not. What I was going to say is that it's lovely that we can respectfully disagree.
Yeah.
And that's really important, that we can have these conversations and we can respectfully disagree with one another. It's been very difficult for people like myself and others who are concerned to have this opportunity to address
people. Well, we've been speaking about this issue and parents' concerns right through the entire process for the last 8 years. Because everyone's views are incredibly important. Sandra, thanks so much for joining me. I really do appreciate it. Enjoy the conversation. And we await page 56 with interest. And that's not to in any way diminish its importance.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sandra. Sandra, have a lovely day. Sandra Adams, concerned parent there about the new curriculum. And it's more, I think, this is not paraphrasing what Sandra says, but the whomever's responsible needs to get that info out there, because in the vacuum of the info being there, the page 56, so to speak, we are forced to simply only speculate as to my reading of it, though. My reading of it, what I have so far, and again, I'll say it here quite clearly if I'm proven wrong, is that they seem to be referencing two genders, male, female, but we'll see. A listener was in touch with us and said, how do I tell my child what to do even if their friends have different rules? My child has just started secondary school and of course it's all about how to be cool and how to fit in. She's 13 and in our house, if a movie is rated 16, you're not allowed to watch it. Age classification is in place to protect children. My child wants to see the latest Conjuring film as all their friends want to go. I think this is wholly inappropriate, as I know my child will have nightmares and I'll be the one up at night trying to comfort them. However, there's no talking to them. There are tears when I put the foot down and say that there are different rules for different households. Just because another parent says it's okay doesn't mean it's okay in our house. How do other parents navigate protecting their children while also letting them not feel left out with their friends? And we had lots of listeners' comments in relation to that. Some with a more relaxed attitude, others saying, you know what, you're right, you know your own child best. Colin McFadgini is marketing manager at Eclipse Cinema and joins us now. Morning.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you on the show. So, I mean, what are the classifications? Because there's different classifications that don't necessarily mean no under a certain age. So what is the classifications there?
I'm glad you asked. And I made a comment myself because that is something that's confusing to a lot of people, not least as well, of course. We often watch, you know, UK TV or they're watching stuff on YouTube and see classifications from other countries too. So it's hard to say. So there's six classifications and a couple of them are guidelines. So general cert means for everyone. PG means it's pretty much for everyone, but there could be some scary moments.
So in terms of parental guidance, does the parent need to be there or you presume the guidance has been issued if the child turns up?
I would say any movie for PG, generally you're talking about kids under the age of 10. There has to be an adult I would say so. But it's saying there might be a few scary moments, but it's okay. Mm-hmm. 12A, now this is where the confusion starts. 12A means, yes, under 12s can go with an adult.
Accompanied.
But there is a guideline. Really what they're saying is, look, you know your own kids, but maybe, you know, under 8s, probably not. But a 9, 10-year-old, a lot of the Marvel superhero movies are those. Same with 15A. They're saying, look, you know your own kids. Maybe you want to bring them. They might be ready for it. Stuff like the Five Nights at Freddy's, which is a huge kids hit, is 15A. They're saying, look, they're fine. And you can bring them. But really, rule of thumb, not under 12s. 15A means, you know, 12, 13-year-olds. But then we get to the two that have caused the confusion with The Conjuring. You know, it's 16 and 18. And that parent's email is very interesting. However, the thing is, it's not a choice. It's not up to other parents. 16 is a hard rule in the Republic of Ireland that means nobody under 16 should be allowed to go in the cinema.
Doesn't matter what mum and dad thinks.
Doesn't matter what... you know, like Ruben Amorim said, it doesn't matter what the Pope asks him. It is 16 hard and fast, and the same with 18. Now, that's a different matter to whether people should watch movies. And I think we'll probably get to that. But for cinemas, this is a hard rule. Now, of course, we live in Donegal. There's 15-year-olds that look older than you and me, Greg, who will wander in, and there are different rules and different cinemas. But that is the rule. And I think if, you know, parents understood that more, they can say, you know, you don't want to kick the can down the road, but it's much easier for that parent to say, I'm sorry, it's against the law, which is true. And it's in much the same way. There'll be lots of people this Christmas that allow their younger kids to have a glass of wine at Christmas dinner. It's different. They're at home. They're with their family. But if they go and have dinner in a restaurant and ask for a glass of wine for the same child, they'd be told, no, it's against the rules.
Yeah, you see, ultimately, it's like a lot of things. The framework is there, and this actually kind of feeds into earlier conversations.
Yeah.
This comes down to parenting. I know for a fact there are parents that say, for instance, don't like underage discos, but their children go, but they don't want the underage discos because they don't want to have that fight with their teenager.
Yeah.
That's parenting. That's what makes it tricky, isn't it? And you're saying quite clearly, if a film's ranked 16, no one under 16 should be in there. Now, listen, there's going to be things happen, right? But, you know, you can't get a greater tool than the parent being able to say, sorry, it's illegal, as you said yourself.
Yeah, I'll give you a good example. So the cinema I work in Bundoran, we do regular parent and baby shows. We can't do a parent and baby show for a 16-rated film, even for a two-month-old who can't do it, because that is against the rules to bring a baby in. So that shows you the way it is. However, 15A, fine. We can bring anyone else in because, you know, common sense would tell you the baby's going to be fine watching Magic Mike, you know. But they're the rules. And I think if parents understand the hard rules, of course, look, we live in the real world, Greg. Things are going to happen. But as a hard rule, you just go, I'm sorry, that's against the rules. It's like serving them in a off lights or anything like that. They're the rules. 16 and 18 mean only if you're 16 and 18. No, doesn't matter what your parents said, doesn't matter what your rules are. And what you do is you go, somebody will say, well, but my kid loves The Conjuring and really wants to watch it. Fine. You know, it's not the 1970s anymore. Jaws was on recently, right? I saw Jaws when I was way too young. It was legal, but I went when I was 3, cried my eyes out all the way through it. It must have been a nightmare for the other people there. I saw it again recently. Still as scary as ever, but I didn't cry this time, Greg, because I'm a big boy now. But even so, right, when Jaws came out, my family were desperate to see, because it wasn't on telly for 6 years. There was no VHS. There was no way to see it. The Conjuring will be streaming in a month.
Yeah.
Let's realistically. And I love the cinema, and I think more people should go to the cinema. But for those things, you can say, yeah, you and your friends can come around, you can watch it in the house and be safe if you think that it's appropriate.
But everyone
for your
knows
own child.
Their own child better.
Yeah.
Like the difference between my two eldest at 13 is night and day. And I won't know. Yeah. They're both through 18. One would be unlikely to have had nightmares and watched it. The other would just take it in their stride. It wouldn't put them up or down. One would be inclined to react to jump scares. The other wouldn't. Yeah. They're two very, very children. And I would have to have, as a parent, knowing them best, made different decisions for the two of them. But sometimes those decisions are tough. But I can't expect regulations to change to make that job for me a bit easier. I hope I don't sound like I'm being insensitive, but you know.
No, but what you can do, because you know your children, I would say, go watch the movie yourself. Make the decision that way yourself. Come watch the movie. You know, if I was not a professional, I would mention that they're only $5.95 on Tuesdays. But come and watch the movie yourself and make your decision. Because as you said, two kids grown up in the same household, totally different attitude to things. There's a lovely movie out at the moment that I was talking about with Rory on Saturday. And, you know, it's a very gentle romance movie called A Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey. But there's a bit in about death of a parent. So there's families out there that would be a really tough movie to watch, even though everything is appropriate. And again, there's a big difference as well. Watching something at home, whether you're a little or even a teenager, watching something at home in the safe environment of home is very different. Then you're with your friends and you're afraid, what happens if I cry in front of my friends? Am I going to be slagged? That sort of stuff.
But you know, can I just pick you up on what you said? Yeah. I know for some teenagers, especially with anxiety, what have you, the mortality of their parents might be one of the things they worry about most. Yeah. And if they were faced with that in a film, it might be far more distressing than a character's head
exploding,
comically exploding or rotating.
Yeah.
Yeah,
100%. Yeah. And actually, I have to say, the British rating system, the Irish system is very good, very, and I think they're particularly good because when you see higher ratings, it tends to be very violent stuff or very often sexual violence, right? They're pretty liberal with general, you know, a sexy scene.
There's
or
no sexy scenes in films anymore anyway. What happened
well, not
there?
Really. No, the Generation Z do
what
not want
there?
That. But when those things happen, they understand it. But the BBFC, particularly their website, you can Google it and it has some spoilers in it, but it will tell you why they've made those decisions. And if again, if you're a parent and you're nervous about it, there's several websites that will tell you.
IDMB's parent guide's very good, actually.
Yeah, yeah, they're very good, yeah.
Okay.
And they will tell you, and maybe, you know, something you're particularly sensitive about, it's a death of a parent, or maybe there's something about, you know, special needs, or who knows?
See, I would base, with this 13-year-old and this parent has done it, I would base it on what you deem their maturity to be.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not in condoning anything illegal, but the number is not almost as important as where they're at in their development, their emotional development and their resilience. And it's a tough call, but that is a mum and dad call or mum or dad call or whatever the combination is.
100%, because as you said, we all have different attitudes and different things, and again in different environments.
Yeah,
I think with small children, people go, she's grand, she's seen all the other movies, but then they're in the cinema, it's really loud and
all right,
dark,
Carly,
and it's really scary.
And what are they seeing on EastEnders and Coronation Street and Emmerdale?
Yeah,
some tough stuff. But I do have to go, Carly. Thanks so much for coming on, really appreciate it. We'll do it again. Have a wonderful Tuesday, everyone. See you tomorrow.